relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
This episode of the America First podcast with me, Sebastian Gorka, is brought to you by Franklin Armory. Shop freedom, quality, and innovation at franklinarmory.com. Franklin Armory, we are facilitators of freedom. Welcome, dear friends, to America First One-on-One with me, your host, Sebastian Gorka, former deputy assistant and strategist to the President of the United States. China, China, China. And can't quite impersonate my old boss as well as some. The topic is back in the news. What do you need to know? Are we on the precipice of World War III? Let's talk to a man that we trust here at America First. He is known as the Spengler columnist for Asia Times, also PJ Media, Claremont Institute, on and on and on. And most recently, the author of You Will Be Assimilated, China's Plan to Sinoform the World. David Goldman, welcome back to America First.
Seb, it's a privilege, pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for the invitation.
So I want to do a kind of one-on-one here, if you don't mind, because not everybody, we have 3 million plus listeners, not everybody is, you know, a sinologist and understands exactly the significance of what happened recently in Asia. So if I may, please indulge me. What is Taiwan? How was it formed, and why does it matter? Let's start with the basics with regards to Pelosi's recent trip.
When the communists won the Chinese Civil War in 1947, the nationalist forces under Chiang Kai-shek, our friends, decamped en masse to the little island of then called Formosa or Taiwan and established an alternative Chinese state, the Republic of China. All the international agreements agreed that this island was part of China, the same way, say, Puerto Rico is part of the United States. However, they had opposing governments, and they stood each other off. Now, in 1972, when Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger went to China and began the process of restoring diplomatic relations, they agreed that Taiwan and China were part of the same country, and then it was up to the Chinese, to the two sides, to work out what their common future was without American interference. That was the Shanghai Communique of 1972. And I spoke to one of the original members of the Nixon delegation who helped draft that communique in 1972. And I was told that Pelosi's visit to China was a really terrible idea because it violated the spirit of the agreement. Why should that be the case? Well, if we were to recognize Taiwan as a separate country, that would throw the agreement out. That would be American interference contrary to Nixon's pledge. If the president or vice president were to go to Taiwan and make a state visit, that would be tantamount to diplomatic recognition, and that would be the end of diplomatic relations and, in my view, the cause of a war between the United States and China. Now, Pelosi is not the president or vice president, but constitutionally, she is number two in line. If the president and vice president, God forbid, die, the Speaker of the House becomes president. So her presence touches that red line. It doesn't quite cross it. And the Chinese debated seriously whether to use military force to prevent her from going, and up to the last minute, we didn't know whether they would or not.
So let me ask the obvious question, the layman's question, and apologies if it's a little bit too obvious, but isn't there something a bit peculiar? It's kind of trying to be in a state of being half pregnant, whereby we say we have a one China policy, or we recognize that this part of the world belongs to China, despite being formerly part of Japan. But we say, despite recognizing China's claim, we also are committed to Taiwan living an independent life. Isn't there a little bit of a Python-esque SNL kind of absurdity to that statement? Because either it's part of China or it isn't, David. Help me explain the way that this policy makes sense.
Well, Asia is a place where a lot of things are kicked down the road for a very long time, and in the short run, don't make sense. From China's standpoint, and this is not simply the fact that there's a communist government, from the standpoint of any government in China, the nightmare of the emperor who sits in Beijing is a rebel province, because China is not a nation state. China is a polyglot collection of different peoples who speak 200 dialects. Cantonese can't understand a word of Mandarin. The Sichuanese can barely understand Mandarin. And many times in its past, countless times, China has broken up into warring provinces and had long periods of chaos with terrible suffering. And in each of these cases, foreign intervention typically made the internal divisions worse. So the nightmare of Beijing, of Xi Jinping, is Taiwan becomes independent and Guangzhou province, Canton, decides, why should we be part of China either? Sichuan does the same thing, and China begins to break up. So in order to prevent the possibility of the fragmentation of the empire, as it's had so many times in the past, China will go to war to prevent any part of its territory being split off. And that's why the Taiwan issue is more than a matter of 23 million Chinese living 90 miles away from the mainland, country of 1.4 billion, the symbolic and, if you will, constitutional value of Taiwan to China is inestimable. So no one should doubt that the Chinese are willing to go to war, whatever the cost, to preserve what they consider to be the integrity of Chinese territory. However, because Taiwan is a different government and they get enormous benefits from having a free Taiwan, huge economic benefits, among other things, the Chinese are willing to kick that can down the road and tolerate that contradictory, as you say, Python-esque status quo for quite some time.
Help us understand what the trip looks like to Xi Jinping and to Beijing writ large. So we have, as you said, the third in line to the highest position in America is the speaker, or second in line. She's the third person on the list of succession. We have this strange scenario in the last 10 days whereby the trip is announced. The actual commander-in-chief, according to media reports, said this is a bad idea. Pelosi shouldn't go. She is committed to going. Then 3 days later, Biden publicly does a 180 and says, okay, she can go. And then the speaker does go with military escorts on a U.S. Air Force jet. How is that perceived in a nation where there isn't two political parties, where they don't elect their commander-in-chief? Do they see an America that is confused, or do they posit some kind of subterfuge? What do you think is their interpretation of the last 5 days in American politics?
Well, when you say they, there's a spectrum of opinions in the Chinese Communist Party that runs from neo-Maoists to people like Jack Ma, who's less communist than his American counterpart, Jeff Bezos. But from the standpoint of Xi Jinping, what we've heard from prominent academics, commentators on foreign policy, is that the United States is deeply confused. We know that the National Security Council spent a lot of time on the phone to their Chinese counterparts saying, please don't start a war over this. Biden has to let Pelosi go for political reasons. We can't look like we're soft on China by canceling the trip. But Biden really doesn't like it, and we really affirm the one China policy, and we really don't mean anything by it, so please ignore it. We weren't at all sure they would. One factoid which is worth mentioning is that there was an empty plane that trailed Pelosi's plane on the flight to Taiwan. It took off from Clark Air Force Base and went into airspace right behind Pelosi, who was coming in from Malaysia, from Kuala Lumpur. That's because we didn't know if the Chinese Air Force would force Pelosi's plane to turn around. It would have had to land in some remote airstrip, and it wouldn't have had enough gas to get out of there. So they had a second plane to pick her up in case that happened. Professor Wen Wang of Renmin University, prominent commentator, was asked by the Observer website in China, are the Americans really stupid or are they just acting stupid? And Professor Wen said, well, they are acting stupid. They're trying to pretend that Biden, the commander-in-chief, couldn't control the Speaker of the House. But in fact, they really are stupid because they're admitting that they are stepping on our red lines repeatedly. So it's a confused and weak power. So basically, it makes us look like idiots.
Which is not a good thing. We are talking about two nuclear powers. The book is You Will Be Assimilated. We're talking to David P. Goldman. I'm Sebastian Gorka. If you enjoy the deep dives with the true experts, with the newsmakers, make sure you are subscribed. Go to Spotify, plug in my name, Sebastian Gorka, America First. It costs you nothing. Do write us a 5-star review. It helps with the dastardly algorithms, and share the links with your friends. Who are the people who suffer the most in a time of war? Of course, it is the innocents. It is the civilians. That has been the legacy of modern combat since World War II. I want you to just listen for a moment to the audio of one of the children who is suffering right now, the refugees of Ukraine.
When there were explosions, we sealed the windows with adhesive tape so that fragments would not hit us.
The thing I miss most in my city right now is my dad, and I really miss his love and care right now.
I miss my home, my dad. As long as I don't think about it, I feel very good. But when I start thinking about dad, I feel very bad.
Imagine if that was your child or your grandchild. Who knows what will happen on the Eurasian landmass, but let's help those who are utterly innocent, like those children. Right now, Food for the Poor is shipping more than 10 million meals to the women and children who have been displaced in Ukraine. You can make a difference right now. For a donation of just $50, can you buy a meal for two at a restaurant for $50? You are purchasing 200 meals for those refugees. A donation of $100 buys 400 meals. Please make a difference. Go to my website today, sebgorka.com, and click on the Help Ukraine banner at the top. You are doing the Lord's work. Let's help those who didn't start this war, but who are suffering as a result of it. That's S-E-B-G-O-R-K-A, sebgorka.com, and the Food for the Poor Help Ukraine banner at the very top. MyPillow is having their biggest sheet sale of the year. You all have helped build MyPillow into the amazing company that it is today. Now, Mike Lindell, my buddy, the inventor and CEO, wants to give back to my listeners. The Percal bed sheet set is available in a variety of colors and sizes, and they're on sale. For example, the queen size is regularly $89.98, but now for you, just $39.98 with your listener promo. Order now, because when they're gone, they're gone. The Percal sheets are breathable and have a cool, crisp feel. They come with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Don't miss out on this incredible offer. It's a limited supply, so be sure to order now. Call 1-800-829-8468, promo code Gorka, or just go to MyPillow.com. Click on the radio listener square and plug in G-O-R-K-A. That's 1-800-829-8468 or MyPillow.com, code Gorka. David, I want to play to you a couple of video clips from the man who sadly bears the title of Commander-in-Chief. First was from the campaign for election, and then the second one is from actually the Oval Office. So this is Biden before he was president.
China is going to eat our lunch. Come on, man. They can't even figure out how to deal with the fact that they have this great division between the China Sea and the mountains in the east, I mean, in the west. They can't figure out how they're going to deal with the corruption that exists within the system. I mean, they're not bad folks, but guess what? They're not competition for us.
not bad, folks, not a competition. Then I guess he was mugged by reality, and this is what he had to say a few months later.
Last night, I was on the phone for 2 straight hours with Xi Jinping. And you all know as well as I do, these folks, and it was a good conversation. I know him well. We spent a lot of time together over the years I was vice president. We don't get moving. They're going to eat our lunch.
Not competition, or they're going to eat our lunch. You're the expert. You've literally written the book. Which is it? Tell us China is a competitor or somebody who's going to take it all away from us, David.
Well, China is the most formidable strategic competitor the United States has ever had. And its ascendance to a place of dominance in the world would make us poorer, less secure, and generally quite miserable. So I'm against it. The thing to remember is that 40 years ago, excuse me, the average Chinese was making $200 a year in U.S. terms. Now it's closer to $20,000 a year. No other country has brought so many people up the income scale so fast. China now, with 1.4 billion people, they graduate about 7 times as many engineers as we do every year. Only 7% of our kids study engineering at college. A third of theirs do. And 20 years ago, their colleges were pretty terrible, but now they're up to world standard. In a couple of years, according to Citibank, China will have more robots per industrial worker than Japan. China is putting massive resources into artificial intelligence, 5G communications, quantum computing, and other advanced technologies with the aim of overtaking it. Now, they certainly have not yet. China has all kinds of problems, but if we sit on our laurels and we continue at the pace we're going, then there's a very high probability that China will overtake us and will become a second-rate power.
And what is the best description? I mean, you talk about this gargantuan increase in wealth in China from ostensibly peasant nation to one which exports its goods all around the world, to America as well. What is the form of that economy? It is still a one-party state, but it's not a free market. So what is the most accurate descriptor?
Well, they like to call it socialism with Chinese characteristics, which simply means a socialist totalitarian state that allows a great deal of private enterprise when it suits them and slaps it down when it doesn't. So an enormous number of Chinese are getting rich. When they get too rich or get too powerful for the liking of the Communist Party, for example, Alibaba's Jack Ma, they get pushed aside. So that's certainly a disadvantage. The full creativity of individual enterprise, which the United States is the great home of, is something the Chinese are not the best at. But they're extremely good at putting massive resources into focused areas to build technologies which advance their productivity.
And how does Xi Jinping compare to his predecessors? Is he just another communist, or is there something unique and special about him?
Well, Xi Jinping, I think, is a very clever centrist. Remember, the spectrum of opinion in the Chinese Communist Party ranges from Jack Ma, who's a Communist Party member, to neo-Maoists like Bo Zhilai, the Chongqing city party boss, who was put in jail for life by Xi Jinping in 2012. Xi Jinping tries to balance the westernizing, more capitalistic, forward-looking view with the old Maoist view. Remember, China has enormous income disparities. The fact that a few people have gotten spectacularly rich doesn't sit well with the individual who's a migrant worker, say, living in Shanghai, making perhaps $12,000 a year in equivalent terms, looking at apartments that cost 20 times his annual salary with no hope of buying a home. So the pressure for income redistribution to offer handouts on a populist basis to poorer people is enormous. The need to develop new technologies and to involve entrepreneurs is a balancing thing. And what Xi Jinping is very, very good at is balancing those elements.
We're talking to David Goldman. Follow him on Twitter at David P. Goldman, the man behind the Spengler column at the Asia Times. The book is You Will Be Assimilated, China's Plan to Sinoform the World. If you enjoy America First, please support those who make it possible. Great patriots like Mike Lindell, the inventor of the MyPillow, the pillow that never gets hot, never loses shape, over 51 million sold. He has more than 150 items, products on his website right now. They're all banned from Walmart. Why? Because he's a conservative. Support a company that is on your side and isn't woke. Go to MyPillow.com. Use code G-O-R-K-A for up to 66% off. Let's give Mike, show Mike some love. You can call them on 800-829-8468. That's 800-829-8468. Or just go to my.com, promo code G-O-R-K-A. With everything that's happened recently in Asia, with the Pelosi trip, David, will you talk to us about the significant changes, not just in Chinese military posture, the recent live-fire exercise, the air incursions, and so forth, but the quality of this military? Is it capable, for example, of executing a mission to take Taiwan? Does it have technology that isn't just stolen from America and re-engineered? Is it actually innovative? What is the state of the technology that this military requires to defeat nations like America?
The stuff the Chinese have that we're afraid of is not innovative at all. It's very well-proven technology. They've got perhaps 1,300 modern ballistic missiles, which can presumably hit American bases as far as Guam, not to mention Okinawa, and almost certainly hit American ships maneuvering at sea. They've the famous carrier killer, or DF-21 missile, can the defenses of an American aircraft carrier. We have the Aegis and other anti-missile systems, but if you fire enough missiles at it simultaneously, you'll probably disable it, possibly even sink it. Recall that the Russians, or rather the Ukraine, sank the flagship of the Russian fleet, the Moskva, while it was under full steam maneuvering in the Black Sea at a distance of 100 kilometers. And I presume that if the Ukrainians can sink a maneuvering ship at a distance from their shores, so can the Chinese. This is all well-known technology, plus they have perhaps 1,000 fourth-generation interceptors stationed on their coast. They've got nothing that matches the American F-35, but a U.S. carrier can carry, what, about 90 F-35s? And they have, as I said, 1,000 fourth-generation planes. They've got 50 or so diesel-electric submarines. So their ability to defend their coast is formidable, and many experts, including the RAND Corporation, which has gamed this numerous times, believe that if there were, God forbid, a war between the United States and China adjacent to its coast, we would lose, and we would lose big time. The People's Liberation Army, on the other hand, as a land force, is a dreadful force. It's undersupplied, undertrained. They're no good at a land war. Now, to invade Taiwan, well, the first thing is they may not have to invade. They can blockade the island. As the Chinese press emphasized yesterday, Taiwan has about 12 days of natural gas on hand, and the Chinese exercises that are going on right now amount to a three-day blockade of the island. So if China blockades the island, prevents anything from being delivered, in a matter of weeks, the whole economy will shut down. That would invite the United States to fire the first shot and create a very difficult situation for us.
But as you said previously, any forceful maneuver against Taiwan would have knock-on negative ramifications for China herself economically, would it not?
Oh, absolutely. There's no question but that we would suspend a great deal of trade with China. There would be sanctions on the scale or much, perhaps much more severe than we placed on Russia. Now, that would create a world depression instantly. We import $700 billion a year from China. That's roughly a quarter of our manufacturing consumption. It's an enormous amount. 90% of the basic ingredients for our antibiotics come from China. So we'd have kids dying of strep. If we cut off trade with China, the consequences for both countries would be disastrous. But I will cite one number which I find concerning. China now exports to Asia and the global south four times as much as it does to the United States. Its dependence on American exports relative to exports to the rest of the world has declined enormously. And the Chinese have said, you know, in their press and academic conferences, that their objective is to reduce their economic relations with the U.S. and their dependency on the U.S. and the ability of the U.S. to hurt them over time.
You can follow this man, David P. Goldman, on Twitter. You can read him in the Asia Times, and also the most recent book you must have on your bookshelf is You Will Be Assimilated, China's Plan to Sinoform the World. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First One-on-One, coming to you from the ReliefFactor.com studios. Are you in daily pain? Have you tried everything else yet failed to find relief? If that's the case, you've got to try this 100% drug-free product that is liberating hundreds of thousands of people from their daily pain, me included. But it's not just me. It's people like Yvonne from California. This is Yvonne's story. Both my husband and I are in our 70s and so grateful to have found Relief Factor. We tried so many other solutions, but none of them have given us the freedom of being pain-free like Relief Factor. Just those two words, pain-free, should be reason enough for you to order the three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95 at ReliefFactor.com. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening like I do, and I promise you, Dr. G's guarantee, by the end of those 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you like it works for me, Yvonne, and half a million of your fellow Americans. You've waited long enough. You deserve to know. What have you got to lose? I mean, apart from the pain. Call 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com. That number again, 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com. David, for me, the clarifying moment is one who served in a Western army, in the British Territorial Army, was steeped in the Western way of war, or, you know, the Clausewitzian understanding of the Westphalian nation states understanding of raison d'etat and the reasons we go to war. For me, there was this moment when I read John Kagan's History of Warfare and then dived deeper into Sun Tzu, that I realized this concept of the national security culture of a nation is so specific, that each nation, as Colin Gray has said, has a prism through which they interpret the threats to their security. And China's is very different. It's not about the nation state, the billiard balls of the Westphalian nation state system bumping up against each other. It's about keeping that nation intact, the influence of the period of the warring states, making sure that you have internal security and integrity without fractious elements of your nation divesting themselves of the whole. You talked about the ethnic groups, the languages, the dialects, and so forth. Will you speak to the demographics? How fragile is China today? Demographically, especially after the decades of the one-child rule, is it a paper tiger, or can it overcome its internal limitations demographically?
Well, it is fragile, but I don't think it's doomed. China took a population of poor farmers who had lots of kids, moved them to cities where the average person has 35 square meters of living space, turned them into a modern country with very few children. As a result, they're aging very quickly. They're aging about as fast as Germany, not as fast as, say, either Japan or Korea or Taiwan. But ultimately, that's a crisis for them. The Belt and Road Initiative has the purpose of wiring into the Chinese economy dozens of countries with lots of young people. If you don't have enough babies, you can do two things. One is you can get immigrants to come to you, young people. The other thing is you can export your capital to where there are young people and get them to work for you. So just in the past 2 years, China's exports to the global south have doubled. Indonesia, largest country in Southeast Asia.
When you say the global south, what are you referring to?
I mean what we used to call the third world, emerging market countries, Southeast Asia, Latin America, Africa, and so forth. Indonesia alone, that's 300 million people, has now invited Huawei, the great Chinese telecom infrastructure company, not only to build out their networks. Huawei is now training 10,000 Indonesian government officials in computer security. They've virtually taken over the entire digital economy of the largest country in Southeast Asia. Vietnam is virtually a Chinese colony. I'm told you can't find 5,000 workers for a new plant there because the Chinese have booked them all out. That's a country of well over 100 million people. Philippines, more than 100 million people. The new president, Bongbong Marcos, son of Ferdinand Marcos, ran on a platform of more economic cooperation with China, got two-thirds of the popular vote. So although China tends to be a bully, can be obnoxious, and is generally disliked, if not absolutely hated, by most people in its region, is offering such potent economic benefits that it is sinoforming. It's assimilating large parts of the world around it. Brazil, Mexico, South Africa, they're all falling under Chinese economic influence. There, I think, we've been totally asleep at the switch. We've allowed China, we kept Huawei and Huawei's 5G out of the United States, but not out of the developing world. And China stands to, as I say, assimilate into its broader economic zone well over another billion people, including countries with a lot of young people. That's how they get through the demographic problem.
One nation that would be very hard to sinoform, David, would be the Russian Federation. What is the game plan with Russia? Is any marriage between those two nations only going to be a marriage of convenience? How much will sooner or later push come to shove and somebody have to decide who the top dog is? So talk to us about Russo-Sino relations.
Well, you said it. The Chinese are sympathetic to Russia's position in Ukraine. But they haven't endorsed it. They've called for a negotiated solution. They've been extremely careful not to violate U.S. sanctions and Western sanctions on the Russian economy because they don't want secondary sanctions. They've kept their head down. They're probably doing some exports of various products through third parties like Turkey in an undetectable way. But so far, they've been very careful not to openly embrace the Russian side. And from what I can tell from Chinese media and talking to Chinese think tank types, they think Putin kind of went over the reservation a bit and stuck his neck out and potentially got them into trouble. Now, there's no question about who's going to be top dog. Russia has 114 million people. China has 1.4 billion people. It is an economy five or six times the size of Russia's. So I think there will be collaboration. They'll be on the same side. They will be common adversaries of the United States, but they won't be allies. China has no allies. China is only out for China.
Does Russia have a plan to deal with China, or is it just focusing on what it has to do in the quote-unquote near abroad?
The path of least resistance for Russia is to build lots of pipelines and sell a great deal more oil and gas to China and make itself less dependent on Western markets and, by definition, more dependent on the Eastern market. Right now, Western Europe is worrying about freezing in the dark because Putin is turning the gas tap off to Western Europe, but Europe is looking for alternative sources for natural gas. Eventually, they'll find them, and after some years, they'll stop importing Russian gas. So Putin needs another market. That will be China. That will make him more economically dependent on China. China likes that because it's overland delivery of energy, which can't be interdicted, say, by the United States Navy in the event of a confrontation.
Exactly. Follow this man right now, David P. Goldman on Twitter. MacroStrategy.com is the website. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First, coming to you from just outside the insalubrious, fetid swamp that is Washington, D.C., from the ReliefFactor.com studios. Relief Factor, pain relief that works, pain relief that's real, pain relief that's liberated me from a lower back condition that I suffered from for 9 years, almost a decade. 2 weeks after taking Relief Factor, the pain was gone, and I'm still pain-free more than 3.5 years later. You heard my story. I was filming in a film studio for 4 days last week. Saturday, I forgot to take my Relief Factor. I regretted it by the end of that 9-hour shoot standing on my feet. I had a double dose the next day, and I didn't have a twinge. That should be you. That could be you. There's only one way to find out. Order the 3-week quick starter pack at ReliefFactor.com. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening like I do, and I promise you, Dr. G's guarantee, by the end of those 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you like it works for me and 500,000 of your fellow Americans. You owe it to yourself to find out. You deserve to be the next success story. There's only one way. What have you got to lose? Except the pain. Call today, 800-500-8384, or go to ReliefFactor.com. That's 800-500-8384, ReliefFactor.com. We've only scratched the surface of what we had to talk about, tying it into the news stories of the day, and we're very grateful for you for doing that. But let's end on the note of what it takes for us to take China seriously. Right now, this administration is not going to do that clearly. They're sending a message of confusion to Beijing. If there's new leadership in the White House, what needs to happen day one, David?
Well, I'm an old Reagan hawk, and I believe in peace through strength. And I'll only make the observation, Sebastian, that back in the early 80s, we spent about 1% of our economic output on federal development. That's building new weapons, testing prototypes, and so forth. Now we spend about 0.33% of our economic output on doing that, and our rate of innovation has slowed, and our commitment to science education has slowed. Our military has become complacent, sells us the same system year in, year out. So I think we need to go back to the spirit of the Reagan Strategic Defense Initiative. We will defend ourselves against any threat from anyone else as long as it takes. I don't believe in going around the world fixing everybody's problems. We're not the Lone Ranger. We're not there to change other people's political systems. Well, we are there to protect the American homeland and protect American military assets. The Chinese, by clever imitation of well-known technologies, have gained an advantage on their home court. But that doesn't mean that American innovation can't overcome that advantage and restore the balance of power and keep America's technological edge and our economic supremacy.
And has something replaced space, as it were, for Kennedy when he revitalized innovation in America? Is it artificial intelligence? What's the next frontier that should be propagated and invested in, David?
It's hard to point to the moon and say we're going there and to unite all the efforts around one great imaginative project that captures the enthusiasm of the American people. It's a bit more diffuse now. We've got several different fields. Artificial intelligence is important. Quantum computing is important. Materials science. There are numerous ones. I think we need America has always needed an inspirational leader who captures our imagination and summons us to greatness. John F. Kennedy did that. Ronald Reagan did that. And I was deeply blessed to have two such presidents in my lifetime. I'm hoping to have a third.
Well, let's end on the words of my former boss, President Trump, with some inspirational words for all of us.
We will not bend. We will not break. We will not yield. We will never give in. We will never give up. We will never back down. We will never, ever surrender. My fellow Americans, our movement is far from over. In fact, our fight has only just begun.
brought forth upon this continent a new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The world will little note or long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
I have a dream.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I can hear you. The rest of the world hears you. And the people...
And we will make America great again.
This is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
Happy Friday, dear friends. This is America First. It's Ask Dr. G Anything Friday. It's Second Amendment Friday. We have an amazing show lined up for you and some very special guests. The number here is 833-33-GORKA. That's 833-334-6752. We're going to make time to take your calls, sound off on any of the issues of the day. But first things first, a hearty congratulations late into the night and into the early morning. I was texting back and forth with Carrie Lake, who's won for Arizona. Yet another massive MAGA victory. The rhinos are running. The good guys and gals are winning. So congratulations, brava, to Carrie Lake, who, if it's up to us and we do what has to be done, will be the next governor of Arizona. Let's start. What should we start with, the bad news or the good news? Let's start with something edifying. We're not at CPAC. Hey, Eric, are you having a bit of a FOMO at not being at CPAC, not being at a big conservative convocation this weekend?
I remember CPAC 2020 being a lot of fun, but there's important work to be done here at America First, so I'm happy where I am.
I agree. We do the big annual CPAC here in the swamp that in Texas right now. And somebody I used to work for almost 30 years ago, oh my gosh, that sounds scary, addressed the convocation of conservatives in the Lone Star State. It is the current prime minister of Hungary, called Viktor Orban. I was one of three national security advisors to his little Fidesz Young Democrats. It's a different thing in Hungary. Relax, okay? They weren't Democrats like here. They were anti-communists, his Young Democrats, Fidesz Party in the 1990s. And he gave a speech in English at CPAC saying things that really shouldn't have to be said, but he did it anyway. Cut two. Play cut.
Hungary shall protect the institution of marriage as the union of one man and one woman. Family ties shall be based on marriage or the relationship between parents and children. To sum up, the mother is a woman, the father is a man, and leave our kids alone. Full stop, end of discussion.
We defend marriage. What is marriage? One man and one woman, as it has always been, as it always should be. I have a real bone to pick, even with some friends of mine who are conservative personalities in the media, who, when they're talking about people like Mayor Pete Buttigieg, talk about Mayor Pete's husband. Excuse me, guys, a man can't have a husband. Get it straight. You don't genuflect at the altar of their language perversion, which is what it is. I don't care if the state has recognized it. It doesn't exist. A woman can have a husband and a man can have a wife, period, end of story. But the fact that somebody, a head of state, actually has to say these things, and that you don't touch our children, get away from our children. The family unit is sacrosanct. Why does he need to say that? This video was posted yesterday on social media. It is going viral right now. This is in Pennsylvania, of all places. This is a pride parade. I'm going to describe it first for all our radio listeners. As a young child being encouraged by one of the, strangely dressed members of that pride parade to gyrate on a pole. Yes, to pole dance. They have a pole there for children. It's not a strip joint. It's out in the open. Play cut, cut seven. For those who aren't watching on Rumble, it is a man, very athletic man, shorn, utterly shaven, his body is as smooth as a seal, in swimming trunks, and a young boy in a rainbow tutu skirt with a rainbow t-shirt that says, love is love. And the young boy cheered, is being praised for pole dancing. That's why Orban Viktor had to say what he had to say. Now, I could go on about who Orban Viktor is, but that's not the point. The point here is that you need to wake up. That we all need to wake up, and we all need to stand up. The left is very clear. Their goals are based upon a very accurate threat assessment. You can't win a war, political or kinetic, unless you understand the battlefield and you understand the enemy. When I was a professor of irregular warfare for the Defense Department, we taught our officers to start every conflict with an estimate of the situation, an EOS. You look at the battlefield, you take a measure of the enemy, their resources, their tactics, and their objective, and then you make a plan, a strategy. You look at your objective, you define your objective, you take an account of your resources, and you devise the way to employ. The technical term is ends, ways, and means. You have means that you employ in a certain way to achieve your ends. The left has a goal. The goal is to acquire power and to maintain it forever. They understand that the greatest obstacle to that happening is the American middle class. Is the Christian values of the American middle class, is the building block of American society and also Western civilization. What is that building block? Your family. The family is the most powerful redoubt, the most powerful fortress against the left. And they need to disassemble it. That's why the Great Society in the 1960s started with what? Incentives for men and women not to get married. Paying mothers to be single mothers. That's why the Weather Underground, one of the most successful terrorist organizations in modern American history, one of their initial slogans was smash monogamy. That's why the sexual revolution was so crucial to the left. If sex is free, then it is not sacred. It is not the ultimate expression of love between a man and a woman exercised within the sacrament of holy matrimony, a bond made for life.
That is how you destroy the defenses of Western civilization. And today, the most evil of all, if we can separate the child from the parent, convince them they're not a boy, they're a girl, or they're not a girl, they're a boy, then everything falls apart and there are no defenses against the left. Wake up, America. Get engaged. Stand up. It's time to stop them. I'm Sebastian Gorka. Make sure you are subscribed to America First. Go to Spotify. Plug in my name. Do write us a 5-star review. Share the links. Never miss an episode. This is the Salem News Channel.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.